Welcome to Breaker Culture Weekly. The guys from BreakerCulture.com help pull back the curtains and give you insight into the hobby. Sit back and enjoy interviews, product breakdowns, and hobby analysis so you can get your edge in the marketplace. And now, to the show.
Howdy, what's going on, guys? Ty from Breaker Culture, and this is episode 63 of Breaker Culture Weekly. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for following us and allowing us to do what we do. So today, we get the chance to talk to one of the true founding fathers of group breaking in this hobby, a gentleman by the name of Chad from Firehand Cards. If you have not heard of Firehand or have not been in one of their breaks or at least watched one of their videos, then I would venture to guess you're very new to this or you haven't really plugged yourself into group breaking, because he's been doing this for a long, long time. Actually, back in 2008 when he founded Firehand Cards. And it's really crazy to hear his story. It's crazy to hear some of the things that we took for granted way back in the day. The way our hobby and the way group breaking has evolved is mind-blowing. It really is an infant niche within this hobby. We're still about 10 years in, and a lot has changed over the 10 years. We continue to evolve, and Chad has kind of been at the forefront of some of those evolutions within group breaking, and I think you'll enjoy hearing his stories and some of the things that he's influenced. So thank you, Chad, for giving us an hour of your time today. Excited for the rest of you guys, you listeners, to hear his story. Now, a couple of the things real quick. Again, reviews. It really does help us, guys. If you listen on iTunes, please go fill out a quick review for us. Let us know what you think. If you listen on YouTube, Spotify, wherever it is, just a quick 2 or 3 sentence review. Let people know kind of what you gather from Breaker Culture. And it helps us to kind of adjust the way we put together content for you. So I'm going to read a couple more recent reviews that I thought were a little interesting. Here's one from Sean R3. Says, Ty does a great job of getting the best interviews and guests on the show. Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. He talks about everything in the hobby. He's very informative. If I had to recommend one podcast for card collectors, this is it. Thank you so much, Sean R3. And we got one from Scott 5C. Fun, interesting, and insightful. This podcast is a lot of fun, mixed with a high knowledge of the convergence of the hobbies within group breaks and sports cards. You get product discussion, people from various roles in the industry, as well as witty banter and Kurt and Vince. What's not to love? Thank you both so much. You know, I'm going to read one more here. TJ and Hayden, looks like they're from Kansas. Just started listening. My 8-year-old daughter and I are really into football cards right now, chasing Kansas City Chiefs cards. Heck yeah. Thank you for posting a podcast for us to listen and help us learn how to value our new investments and what to look for as we broaden our knowledge into this hobby. Thank you, TJ, and thank you, Hayden, for listening. 8-year-old, that might be the youngest. Real quick, with football cards, we've got some really good stuff planned with Panini. We're going to walk through some neat things about how football cards, what goes into that, and we're going to spend some time with the group over at Panini coming up over the next 6 weeks. So I think you're going to like that stuff coming out in your world. So again, thank you for the reviews. Thank you for giving us feedback. Enjoy the conversation with Chad. Be on the lookout later this week. Have a podcast coming out with Chris over at Top Shelf as we break down all the little things you need to know about this year's National. We also give you some insight into where you should stay, things you should know, things you can do outside of the National in Chicago, all from the mind of Chris over at Top Shelf. Anyway, enjoy this conversation. Enjoy the show. All right, before we dive into the podcast today, I want to make sure you know that we have an awesome deal with dubscoffee.com. That's dubscoffee.com, where you can go get 2 bags of coffee with free shipping, and they're going to toss in a pack of baseball cards for you. How good is that? Seriously. 2 bags of coffee, free shipping, and a pack of cards for you to enjoy. Enter code BREAKERCULTURE on dubscoffee.com, and all of that will take place behind the scenes for you. So enjoy that. Every time you order coffee at Dubs Coffee, it's freshly roasted for you. There's no shelf coffee. Nothing's sitting there getting stale. It is roasted after you order. And when you open that bag of coffee, I promise you, it will be one of the best smelling shipments you ever get in the mail. Your mailman will thank you. Your family will thank you. And best of all, your taste buds will thank you. Go to dubscoffee.com and enjoy it. On to the show. Chad, how you doing, man?
I'm doing very good, Ty. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, thanks for being available. Is your lawnmower guy there yet? I hear he might be making an appearance today.
not yet. hoping he has one of those late days where he sleeps in and doesn't come till after we're done talking here.
Nice, absolutely. Well, man, thanks so much for making some time. It's been a long time coming. I've been wanting to chat with you, so. You're not going to the National this year, right? We don't even get to talk about the National too much, which is kind of crazy, but just bad timing for your fam.
Right, I won't be there. We've got some family stuff that's a little bit more important than me being away in Chicago this year. But I love the National. It's something I really enjoy going to each year. I've only missed a couple since I started going back in 2012.
Wow. And,
Chicago is one of the best ones. I always like the Chicago one the best. I think maybe because it's so centralized.
Right.
And so many people can go. So many of our customers are there. And it's going to be a little bittersweet not to be able to go. But, you know, there's always another year of the National that we can make it back.
Right. Exactly. So for this will air probably a couple days before the National. What would you, for folks that are just going for the first time, any advice you'd give them?
Bring lots of money. And... and bring it like a checklist for yourself. I mean, there's so much stuff there to look at. You kind of make a, even if you're there all days, it's almost like you can't see everything, you know, or you have to have something. If you're there with something that you're specifically looking for, kind of go with that and go to the, you know, various booths, ask around. I mean, when I go, it's kind of like a free for all. I kind of just like to browse the tables. I really enjoy just coming across and come up, you know, walking up to some tables where the guys just got huge high-end cards. Doing what we do, you see so many cards every single day.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit to wow you, you know? So that's my favorite part about the National, going, you know, checking out some of these high-end cards that, you know, are like the creme de la creme that, you know, one of the stuff you're just not going to see anyplace else, so. I always tell people, if you can't find it at the National, there's probably a chance that you're never going to find it.
Hmm. Interesting. That does make sense for sure. What would you say is the non-negotiable? What's the one thing you got to do? Maybe the VIP program or redemption program? What's the absolutely must-do thing at the National?
Absolute must-do thing. For me, the absolute must-do thing is I've got to go to the Breaker Pavilion and just meet up with all my buddies, first off. For the casual collector, I would say you've got to go to get the autograph session with the TriStar. There's so many people there signing. The fact that they just get them all together in one spot, you probably spend some time standing in line, but you can walk away from that place with so many signatures. And a chance to shake hands and rub elbows with a bunch of, you know, Hall of Fame baseball players, football players. I got everybody there.
Right.
I would say that's one of the big draws that I think you just can't afford to miss out on. If you're going to go there, you got to take advantage of that the opportunity to meet all those guys and get some signatures.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. So are you going to be back breaking then? Will you schedule breaks or will you kind of just be taking some time off? Is that the plan?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
No, cool. we'll still be breaking during the National.
Got it.
Regularly scheduled 7 days a week, so we'll still be breaking.
My gosh. All right. Well, let's get into the story a little bit because you've probably heard it. Well, actually, you have heard because I've sent you a couple of texts to say, hey, you got to listen to this podcast because once again, your name is mentioned. You've been doing this since 2008. Is that correct?
Yes, 2008.
So you're like 12 years. Next year, which is mind-blowing when you think about that and kind of the hobbies timeline. What would you say you were one of the first couple? I mean, of true group breakers?
I always tell people, you know, come to the Sunshine after all this time, they our child was like one of the first ones, and I was one of the early on, one of the first. But when I stumbled across it, there were, I'd have to say, I think there was at least two to three guys. I think there was three guys that I remember that were actually running an actual group break.
Okay.
Online back then, and I'm gonna shout them out too. So there was a guy named AR Platinum, a guy named the Pack Ripper Alex, and a guy named Paul NJ39. These are their YouTube handles. And they were running breaks, you know, right when I, back 2007, 2008, when I first stumbled across it. And, you know, it was so infant. It was so, I mean, I love telling these stories because people nowadays that come into break and they would have no idea. They couldn't even fathom like how long it used to take to get a break to actually get going, filled, and actually broken from start to finish. You know, the technical aspect of it, how, you know, prehistoric it almost seems,
right.
When we used to run these things. So yeah, my first break was actually Thanksgiving Day of 2008 was the first time I actually hosted my own break.
Okay. That's awesome. So Thanksgiving 2008, in between football games, you're hosting breaks.
Right. Right.
So good. So was Platinum, AR Platinum, was that Platinum? Is that Platinum Car Breaks now? Or is that totally separate?
No, completely different. I believe AR Platinum still makes YouTube videos. From what I hear, I think he does scratcher, like lottery ticket scratcher videos nowadays.
Jeez.
But if you watch AR Platinum, it's very, very easy to recognize, an all-white background on a white table. And he's got the voice of a radio DJ, very deep and very recognizable. If you've ever watched his videos, you would not forget them. You'd be able to recognize an AR Platinum break video in a heartbeat again if you saw one.
So. Oh, wow. All right. I'll have to look it up. Check it out. Nice. So you saw these guys break, and kind of put me in the mind of Chad back in 2008. What kind of drew you to the group breaking scene?
Okay. So basically what happened was I got done playing baseball, was doing some little small jobs here and there to make ends meet. I was working construction, working as an electrician, coaching high school baseball locally, all this different stuff. And there was a couple times where I just needed some cash. I had some cards that I had acquired, you know, earlier on, that I brought them to my local card shop to see if I could sell them. You know, put them on eBay for me, got me some cash back. And occasionally, I'd walk into the shop and I saw these cards that I'd never seen before. Cards all of a sudden had players' jerseys in them and autographs. And so I, would tinker here and there and buy a few packs. And I kind of found myself right back in the swing of being a collector and wanting to rip packs all the time, making these trips to the shop. I found myself more and more spending every dollar that I earned going back to the card shop. And, I'm sitting here thinking that I'm like, going to hit a $1,000 card and make more money, right?
Right, right.
So I remember the exact reason I made my very first YouTube video was I bought a box of 2008 Donruss threads. And it's so funny to think about this nowadays because the guy signs anything put in front of him. It was the first time that a Pete Rose autograph was ever inserted into a pack. You could never get Rose's auto because Topps wouldn't touch him because he was banned. And so Donruss had just lost their MLB license, so all of a sudden now Pete Rose has autos and boxes, right? And I pulled a Pete Rose, number to 10 dual patch auto, and I was like, man, I got to show this thing off, right? So I was already running an eBay, had my own eBay channel at that point, was selling stuff more. So I just made a little video, in the beginning, you don't even show my face. I think I showed a dummy card with my eBay ID on it. kind of trying to direct more people to my eBay account, showing off my Rose card. And that was my first video. And I found after that point, I stumbled across a couple other videos of guys opening boxes. They weren't doing group breaks, but they would go to the shop, they'd buy a box of cards, they'd bring it home, and they would just basically video record themselves unboxing it, opening it. And I would watch these guys because I'd say, man, rather than just going blindly to the shop and throwing $100 at a box, I want to know what's going to come out of it, So I'd be watching these videos all day, these guys ripping these boxes, and, that's how I would base my decision on what box I would buy next. I was getting a peek into what was going to come out ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then of course, then I stumble across a couple of guys that are, now I hear the guys, like, they're talking and they're telling people that different cars are going different places. Like, you know, so I was like, whoa, what's happening here? This guy's, how, you know, these aren't his cards. You know, he's opened the box, but you know, I found my first break, and I believe it was the Pack Ripper, Alex is his name. Mm-hmm. He was doing a break of like 07 Ultimate or something. And, you know, so I click on his and I see these videos, and they've got videos to sign up for him. So I, you know, figured, hey, I want to, you know, that you, the price points were so minuscule. They're so right. cheap. I think it was like $20 to pay to get a team and a full case of Ultimate or something. And I had just come home from the shop and the box of Ultimate was $300 on the shelf. I was like, I'll pay $20, you know? And so I signed up and I was a little skeptical. I mean, the guy lived in, I believe he lives in Philadelphia or something. It's like, you know, just kind of sending some PayPal money to some guy in Philadelphia and hoping that I'm going to get some cards and they're going to show up in my mailbox. You know, there's no, the trust factor. I'd never done it before. So, you know, that was my first go at it. And I joined a break of the Pack Ripper and another guy named Paul NJ39, both East Coast guys. Mm-hmm. And I got, of course, stroke of pure luck. I land like the Yankees in my first ever break. Get a couple of Jeter jerseys and at the time, Qingming Wang autograph. And, you know, seemed like easy. This is amazing. You know, spent $20. I got, you know, a couple $100 in cards. So that was it for me. That was the beginning. And, amazing. You know, I kind of just kept joining breaks here and there. And then, you know, eventually I was like, you know, I could get these boxes and do this myself. So There you go.
That's awesome. So 2018, you kick it off, you start doing your own. I mean, best way you can explain it, how hard was it for you that first month or two to fill breaks? I can only assume it was just, you're probably more so educating customers at that point because they have no idea really what group breaks are. But did it just rock your world when you tried to fill them up? Or
No, not to be honest, because back then it was the strange part about YouTube is like it was not even close. Obviously not even close to a business at that point. So
right.
I wasn't even, you know, I was constantly making videos of myself showing the cards that I was getting in breaks, just making videos talking about cards, you know, stuff that I saw going on in the hobby, my opinions. So I was starting to already get like a little bit of a YouTube subscriber base and people watching the videos. And when I just decided to put the break out there, I mean, you broke it for nothing. You did. There's no profit involved whatsoever. I think I broke you have to go watch and back and watch the videos. A little baseball mixer cost $17 to join. And, but even though I was like, to explain the process back then you make a video. Basically, we called it a sign-up video. You make a video promoting your break. Uh-huh. And if people wanted to join, they would leave YouTube comments, you know, oh, I'm in for one, or they claim their spots. Uh-huh. When you got up to close to 30, then you have people start sending you the money. Then you have to go buy the boxes, you know, buy the boxes. Then you make another, you know, the next step, then you make a video drawing the teams.
Yeah.
And then the next day you do the break and record it and upload it. You know, nothing was done live. A break, like a really fast filling break, seemed like it, like the quickest I could do it. It would seem like it would take a week to 10 days from start.
No way. Wow.
And like, you know, that was like considered quick. You know, guys like, wow, Chaz, break filling up so fast. It only took 10 days. You know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's so crazy to look back at those days.
No,
you know,
kidding. Now
you know, if your break's not full in an hour, some guys are asking for a refund. You're like, you know, an hour. So
that's awesome. Were you under the same handle? Were you breaking under Fire Hand at the time? Or was that?
No. Okay. Sorry. Cut you off quickly there. But,
there you go.
Yeah. The Truth 17 on YouTube is my original handle. It's still active on the Truth 17. That's my handle mostly everywhere. We flipped it to Fire Hand Cards. I started a new channel when I actually took the plunge and turned it into, decided I was going to actually turn this into a business back in 2012.
Okay.
That's when we made the Fire Hand Cards channel.
Got it. Okay. So when was that moment? I mean, obviously it was around 2012, but when did you realize, you know what, this is legit and I got to make this work?
I could say that As far as knowing that it was like it was something big, was the first time I ever saw it. I knew that it was awesome, and I was like, man, this is crazy. Whether turning it into a business like that moment, I first recognized like the how cool it was, and like how it was so infantile. I knew nobody knew about it. There's so people, and I was just like, man, this is the greatest idea. Like I can't. And the whole premise of it, this is what gets lost nowadays. The whole premise of it at the beginning was we were taking boxes that either A, you couldn't afford or you didn't want to spend your money on because it's so expensive, and we were finding a way that we could all enjoy it and spread the love out, right? And so that was for me like, man, exquisite. Like I'm never, A, I don't even remember how much long it would take me to earn $500 back then, a month. But spend $500 on a pack of cards was insane. But if you could do a group break and spend $25, but you could still get the same cards, was amazing to me. So I, right when I saw it, I knew that was just amazing. When it really, when I really, it's kind of like it wasn't a and like a light bulb in my head, like, man, this, I can really do this. It was like I better change what I'm doing or else something's going to happen, because I think it's 2011 when they decided you were going to have to pay taxes on PayPal, on federal taxes on what happened with PayPal. So all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I've been running breaks for X amount of years, right? I get this 1099 in the mail. It's like, yeah, you broke, you have like $400,000 in PayPal sales, and you're gonna owe blah 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 blah. Luckily, I kept track of everything and could show that we weren't making any money at all, so we didn't have to pay any tax on it. But it's like a moment where I was like, wow, okay, that's how much money came through my PayPal last year, just breaking these cards for fun, and I could, I just. I was in, but it was that moment coupled with the fact that I was still kind of grinding so hard to make a solid living, and working as a baseball coach and just making not a whole lot of money. And I love baseball, don't get me wrong, it's like my all-time love and passion. But it was just, it wasn't really, you couldn't raise a family or buy a house on the what I was doing. So I had a moment when I decided, I was literally I was sitting in the parking lot at of the school where I was coaching, and it was the day that we had to go in for CPR training, had to do it every year. And I'm sitting there, it's like for the new year coming, I'm just going, am I going to do this again for another year? Am I going to put myself through another year of this dedicated to the, and I had been mulling over this idea of doing the cards full time, and I just, I basically walked into the office and told him I was done, and went home and told my dad that I was going to do it, going to give the cards a shot, full time and see how it goes. And that was it. That was 2012, and I really started ramping up how many breaks I was trying to do, and started trying to wrap my brain around being a business owner. I had no teach me how to do this. This is something to start from my own, but that was it for me. That was that moment. And
That is cool. That is very cool.
coincidentally, I will throw this in there, that same day I made that decision. I left, went home, I called my butt, and I called my two best friends at the time and said, I just quit my job, come meet me at the bars, have a drink, right? And that night, leaving the bar, I met my wife.
No way. That's
Yes,
awesome.
same day. Same exact day that I quit my job, decided we're going to do cards, is the same day I met my wife. So, pretty
See,
cool story.
no kidding. Confirmation. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. I should have asked this earlier, but you mentioned playing baseball. Were you in the minors? What was going on with that? Were you a
Yeah, I played minor league baseball for a
Okay.
few years. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
So.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. I ask that question a lot, and usually people don't have a defined moment where they can say, you know what, it happened here. Mainly because I think it's, you know, you go back a long ways, and you were doing this before it was so commonplace. But you mentioned something that was interesting. You said the premise is lost a little bit now, mainly because the products you were talking about, I think, are just so expensive back then. Is that because it's just so commonplace now to have high-end products?
So there's everything's high, you know, not everything's high end, but
right.
obviously the manufacturers have figured out that this is where all the money goes in cards nowadays, is through rakes, or most of it. And they've subsequently, you know, gone to so many more high end products, pushing the price points up on these products. You know, I remember years ago thinking, when Panini and Upper Deck lost their baseball license, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're going to have to rely on Topps to make high end products now. Like all they made was triple threads back then.
Yeah.
They made it next to impossible to get like a Pujols auto or anybody good. So it's just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And now look where we are today. I mean, they make amazing, crazy high end products, you know, definitive diamond icons, high dollar stuff, but it's beautiful. It's great. It fits exactly into what we want out of cards for high end collectors. But what I say when I say the premise is lost is that the idea is still there that you're splitting the cost of something expensive and making it more affordable. But the means and the people joining nowadays is not the same. So it's made it affordable for the guy that can't afford the exquisite, but it's also made it so that the guy that can buy exquisite, if he wanted to anyways,
right
now that guy goes and buys all the best teams and all the breaks, and he's trying to, you know, capitalize his money and spread it across a bunch of cases and acquire all the best cards from multiple cases. And, you know, that just that kind of deal where it's just anything where it's more, the more it's exposed and people start to dissect it, they find ways to take angles on it and, you know, try and stretch their dollar out and capitalize on how the breaks are done, basically.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. So let's go back to where you left off. So you started in 2012. What did you immediately start focusing on then at that point? Was it try to figure out ways to increase your profit margin? Was it how do I start getting capital to buy more product? How do I grow a customer base? What would you say was the most important thing for you to focus on at that point?
Let's put it this way. I needed to start making a profit on breaks. That was, that's the part I forgot to touch on. It was like frowned upon to make money doing breaks when we first started doing it on YouTube. Like it was like people were like looked down like, whoa. When I was running those breaks all the time on YouTube, my pay, quote unquote, for doing them was I would get a spot in the break for free, you know?
Yeah.
And there was people like that were like, they thought that was outlandish. Can you believe it? You know, that guy takes a free spot in his break. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, that whole hurdle of like, okay, so now I'm going to start making money. No, don't get me wrong. There was a couple other guys. When I made the flip, I wasn't the first one to turn it. There was already guys that had at that point picked it up and were making money doing breaks. I was kind of held off on, you know, I was kind of holding true to not really going that route until, you know, I saw the numbers. I made the decision that, you know, let's just go with it. So
yep.
I had to try to find a means of, you know, we were buying all our product from the local card shop. So I had to find a way, let's see, how do I get the product, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily cut him out. I still bought product from him for years and years through them. But I remember we made a deal and I didn't even seek them out, but I got an email from a distributor who had seen my YouTube videos, just kind of reaching out like, hey, you know, we're stumbling across your YouTube channel and, you know, we've never sold to anybody that doesn't own a shop, but we're willing to open up an account if you are. And so I was the first breaker to ever kind of like deal directly with a distributor. And that was kind of a thing where, and I remember Mike, the first time they flew me up to their place to check it out and have a meeting. And I remember walking back in the warehouse and seeing all this wax, and it was just like a kid in a candy store. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's like pallets and pallets and mountains of wax. And and what an eye opener to see all that stuff there. And then to see what stuff actually cost, you know, to get it directly from them instead of like buying from a shop. And so that hurdle was got to get product, got to get more product, try and find it at a price where I still want to be, early on I still had this idea like I want to be cheap. I want to be the cheapest possible place to buy a break, you know? And that worked for a very long time. That was my whole, I used to have a catchphrase, the cheapest on the interwebs, I used to say all the time. you know, cheapest place in the web to get your break or whatever. And that and social media. I had no idea how to do social media. So my first hire, first guy that I ever hired, his name was Irving. Mm-hmm. He runs Monera Sports Cards nowadays. The Mustache Mondays guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know about Mustache Mondays, Mustache Breaks. And I hired him and to come on and help me do sorting and shipping. And I've handed off anything remotely tied to social media to him because I knew he was a friend of mine. He knew how to do all that stuff. I had no idea.
Yeah.
But I knew if I wanted to get the word out about Firehand, it had to be done on the internet. It had to be done on social media, and it had to be done more so than just on YouTube videos. There was so much that I wasn't accessing at that point.
That's interesting. So when you were acquiring customers at that point, what channels were you finding most success with? I feel like at that point it was so greenfield that you probably could have done anything and you would have probably acquired customers. But what was the most effective for you?
Twitter early on was pretty effective.
Uh-huh.
I found that if we did some, like, you know, every once in a while we just start doing a couple giveaways, giving cards away. We get a lot of responses, you know, people.
Yep.
People like free stuff, obviously, so we get a lot of responses there. People come to the website from Twitter. We'd always kind of put that out there. Word of mouth is been our number one thing over the years. It's always just been word of mouth. We just ask people if you enjoy what we're doing or you think we're doing a good service, then tell a friend about it. You know, we had, it's almost like, I was lucky in the sense of being so into it so early that I didn't really have to try so hard to find new people. It's almost like people found us, you know?
Right.
When we moved to Blog TV is when everything really exploded because we were all of a sudden doing everything live. And that really... I think that was the moment when it really took off and we just started seeing increase in customer base because now everything we're doing is being done in real time. You could put it out on Twitter and people would click the link. They come watch you live. You know, people had never seen it before or seeing it for the first time. You know, they're not watching a YouTube video that was pre-recorded a week ago. We're signing people up live in the stream for breaks of products that we have right there in hand. Like that was a huge deal. I remember when we just to have the product in hand available for you, like you could buy a break right now and I'm gonna break it in the next half hour was like blew people's minds, you know, from where we were for the previous 4 years.
That is crazy. 3 years
before that.
To think that was so recent. Like it's almost impossible to think of not being live and breaking right now.
Right. Nowadays it's like if you're for some breakers, if you're, you know, you're not selling anything unless you are live,
right?
And like getting the people that are sitting in your live chat to take those spots right now, then, you know, that's their whole model. That's why I say we're lucky where it started so much. We built such a following through the YouTube channel.
Yep.
And then, you know, moving to that live platform. And everybody's coming across it. It kind of just built its own.
Mm.
Our customer base just kind of built its own. And everything we did, we did little things here and there. Email marketing was a big deal at the beginning for me. That came along with it, you know, with the social media part of it.
Yep.
Just sending out emails a couple times a week, letting everybody know these are the breaks that we have on the website right now. Take a look. And it was just constantly engaging people, you know. Just like any other business, I'm sure I get spammed every day by constant emails, but it makes you aware of what's happening. It gets people coming back to your website. And I think that, you know, that was the one. So I have to say that between Twitter and the emails, mm-hmm. if anything, those were the two that really got us some new customers outside of just organically
right.
being live all the time.
Got it. No, that's interesting. It's funny, as you were talking about not making money on breaks early on, it reminded me, I mean, I feel like it was probably 6 or 7 years ago back on the blowout forums when they would do breaks kind of just starting. And I remember when like Houdini would put a break on there and then there would be the guy who would go and break down the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd be like, wait a second here. He's making like $7 on this. How is, wait, this guy's spending like hours of his life doing this.
I know. Because they don't think about it. That's the thing. It's so new back then. Nobody really wrapped their mind around that part of it, right? Everybody just thinks they send you the PayPal money, you open up the cards, and they show up in your mailbox. And nobody thinks about everything that goes on behind the scenes, leading up to that, in between, and all the other stuff happening, you know?
Yeah.
And they just think that, you know, like in any industry, time is money, right? So you're spending time putting all this stuff together. You know, you got... But I know exactly what you're talking about. We used to have that, you know, guys doing that to us all the time, you know, and I remember when on the blow-up forums you read about those, you know, they still do those breaks nowadays and people will still break down the price.
Right.
You know, they still do that on the forum sometimes. So it's very funny to me.
It totally is.
And this is all blown on the assumption that everybody assumes that they know how much the breaker paid for the product too, right?
Sure, sure.
So, you know, this is how much it's paid. You don't even know what the guy paid to get the boxes.
Exactly. I love it. People have way too much time on their hands. That's for sure.
Yeah,
that's for sure. I referenced earlier, right? Actually, you referenced it, the interview with Michael at Clubhouse. And he knows you, obviously. You guys were buds because you started about the same time. What he mentioned he spent like 100 hours a week early on. Were you putting in that much time? 2012 or 14? Was it that crazy?
Dude, it was every day. It was almost every waking hour for me.
Wow.
When I was, because I was a, you know, one man show. Like Michael's been a one man show forever. I don't know how, finally hired somebody to do some sorting for himself, and bless his heart, guy. You know, finally. But until I brought, you know, Irving on back into like 2011, 2012, I did everything myself, from, you know, breaking, packing, sorting, shipping. Then, you know, back then you'd have to. Nowadays, you make a video, you're live, and then all the software automatically saves it, and you just hit a button, it uploads to YouTube, right?
Yep, so right.
Back then, I had one camera. It wasn't even I didn't even have a webcam on YouTube. I had like a little handheld. I still have the camera, actually. I use it still to take pictures of my mixer breaks. It's a little like 8-megapixel camera on a little tripod. We didn't have multiple camera angles going. I had one camera, had my face and the cards on it together from the side, and you know, you'd have to, I'd have to put that on. I'd edit the video, and I put a title, like, you know, I try to do like cool stuff to make my video stand out a little bit too, you know. And that was so much time I invested in editing videos. And yeah, man, I mean, I wouldn't even be able to calculate 100 hours a week. Probably I would say a minimum that would be, I would wake up, you know, I break one night, like 3 or 4 breaks. The next day I'd spend the whole day packing them up, putting them in bags, getting them ready to, you know, ship them out a couple of days later. And just a cycle that just kept going. And you know, until I got that extra help. Yeah. I was cranking hours, man. But like I said, for me, I loved doing it. It was so much fun for me.
Right.
I didn't even see it.
That's the key.
About being a job. You know, it's just like, this is amazing. I get to rip all these high-end cards, hang out with all these guys, and all I got to do, you know, I got to do some sorting and shipping afterwards, but it seemed like not a big deal to me.
Right.
So.
No, I love it. I love it. Has it always been in your house, or do you have an office now where you separate life a little bit?
Yeah, well, where I break from personally is a house, an office in the house, but we have a separate location where my other breaker Ryan breaks from there, and we do all our sorting and shipping out of there. So
if you were to put yourself in your customer shoes kind of during that early phase, we'll just say 2012 to 15, what would you say they would probably point to as the thing you needed to improve on the most?
That I needed to improve on. I think we, you know, mistake. Everybody's human, right? So
yep.
People make mistakes. We're not robots. There's some instances early on in those times where we would make some mistakes, whether it be during the break itself, in preparation of, like, you know, doing a team draw, not double checking my work. And I do the team draw, all of a sudden I've got one more team than there are people in the break, you know. And now the guy that drew the Yankees in the initial draw, you know, I got to redraw the teams. Now that guy's going to be sour because he doesn't get the Yankees anymore, right? So to coming from, you know, making the mistake when it comes to shipping, and somebody gets the wrong cards. But, man, it's really hard. to put myself in their shoes and think about what we could. Because back then, it's so, nobody knew any different.
That's true. Yeah. There were so many things you could improve on.
They don't have anything to compare to. Like, man, I really wish Chad was more like Breaker X over here and did this. Like, there was nobody, it was basically like we were the ticket.
Yeah.
There's a few other guys, and everybody kind of did mostly like the same stuff, We've always prided ourselves on, or I would say I've always prided myself on trying to be innovative and bringing new stuff, new ways of breaking, changing the stuff as we go, and come up with new ideas. How can we make this better? So I think there's always stuff you can improve on.
Yeah.
So like I said, stuff gets lost in the mail. We kind of 86 that. We used to. Everything has its process. I could always look back and I tell my wife, one time, I remember when she's watching me one night sort all these cars and ship them out. And I remember telling her, one day I will not do this part of it ever again. I said, I promise you, one day somebody else is going to take all these cars and sort them and ship them for me. We're not there yet, but one day it's going to happen. And there's that trust factor, though, was something, a hump I had to get over, trusting somebody else to take your baby, basically, that you've built, and entrusting them to not make the mistake and, handle all the sorting and shipping and that part of it. But, it's tough, man. We came up with so many different things. I just think those early stages, I was almost like the golden days of breaking. Everybody that always comes back from the old times, they come back to me. We have a lot of customers that have been around from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Always, once in a while, they say, remember back when we used to do this, and remember back in the days of blog TV, and just sitting here drinking, getting tipsy while we're breaking all night and having fun, and they're the golden days, man. I don't know how else to say it. It's so different nowadays, but it's
for been sure,
all the way through.
It's got to be nice being the standard people judge against. That's a good position to be in, for sure. You mentioned some of the innovations and things like that. What were a couple of innovations that you kind of focused on early on that you kind of hitched your horse to and you're glad you did? Anything come to mind?
I think so early, the video, when I was on YouTube, I remember doing the editing of the videos and trying to make them stand out from just a standard breaker was one of them.
Yep.
Some stuff, it's so funny. Who were we talking with the other day? One of our sorters and shippers, but there's so many things that are basically like standard practice nowadays that kind of started through Firehand, even from the having the lineup of breaks on your screen when you're in between breaks, everybody posts an Excel sheet like this is what's next or this is how many break spots. I remember the exact day that I did that the first time, and I remember even telling the guys in the chat room, they're like, watch, this is going to be on everybody's breaker channel.
Totally.
In a year, because I was just kind of like one of those moments where you had, you get guys constantly coming in your room going, hey, what's breaking next? Well, you got, instead of answering that question over and over and over and over again, I'm like, why don't we just put a list on the screen that shows everything that we have to break and everybody can see for themselves? So I don't have to keep answering this question over and over, right? We came up with hitless packs. So you get people, sometimes not, different styles of breaks that you do where people don't, not everybody gets a hit, right? So for some, we came to a point where if a guy doesn't get a card, we're not shipping him anything. We're not refunding the guy who's shipping. Let's just give him a pack of cards. So that's where like the hitless pack was born.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people do hitless packs nowadays.
Yep.
We have reward points on the site. We were the first one to offer reward points. You buy anything on the Firehand site, you get a basically it's like a 1% cash back.
Mm-hmm.
Point for every dollar you spend. I've been trumped since. A lot of guys doing 2% now. You know who you are, but I remember Flawless Football was the birth of the random player break. Flawless Football, you do such a beautiful product to break, but man, it's so expensive, right? So.
Yep. Yeah,
I guess they're always trying to find a way that the guy. I want to find a way for average Joe guy to get flawless card. That's always my goal. How does average guy get to get the big card? And so, I just one day I was like, man, there's somebody. They had the checklist out because I was breaking down you know, what teams do we make combo teams? And I'm looking at the full checks. I'm like, look at how many guys. I bet if we took, there's like 200 guys in a checklist, it would cost like $10. You can get one player and we could do the whole case for $10. So, you know, we started doing random player breaks, and I sold so much flawless football that year. It's incredible because, you know, you put a random player break up and it'd be sold out in an hour. And, you know, prior to that, we were doing, you know, anybody that was breaking flawless was basically you're paying for a hit. You're paying $150 to get a guaranteed hit. And 9 of the 10 hits weren't worth the $150 out of the box. So, you know, you're paying to lose half the time. So it was, you know, those kind of things. I'm sure what else, anything else that we.
That's interesting. So were you, at that time, were you selling only through your site, or were you selling on eBay?
No, not eBay. I did eBay, only on my website, on the site and live in the chat. Oh, here's one that's that you wouldn't even think to. Where did this originate? So whenever anybody signs up live in their room, right, nowadays, or you do I'm sure you're familiar with fillers.
Yeah.
Fillers. You draw a line in your chat. You know, say, all right, I'm going to draw a line. Everybody that wants in, sign up under the line. And that started with 2008 Exquisite Football. When we were in the early days of Blog TV, like I was saying, there were so few breakers that anybody that wanted to be in a break was populated in like one of three rooms, you know. So in my room, there was constantly anywhere between 100 to sometimes 200 people, and they had to have waiting rooms to accommodate how many people were in there. So the only way that I could attempt to fairly let everybody join a break was I would draw a line in the chat. The first 30 people that were able to get their one under the line got to be in the break. And because I had that exquisite, everybody wanted that exquisite football. And I was like, okay, I don't know how, you know, everybody's like, put me in. And I was like, the only way I can do this, I'm going to draw a line. Whoever's the first 30, you guys are in, you know?
Crazy.
And it's like, every time I see a line drawn in a room, I'm like, oh, man, when we first did that, draw that line. So funny.
Yeah, the little things. That's true. There's so many little things that you just had to learn the hard way, figure out a way around it. That's interesting. So you mentioned early on your kind of MO was being the cheapest.
Right.
What would you say kind of shifted over time and has become kind of your unique, maybe your niche or your unique attributes or something that kind of makes you who you are?
Over time.
Or is it still? Is it still the cheapest? I don't think it is.
No. We'll never be the cheapest anymore. We're just not because we couldn't afford to be the cheapest on some stuff, but
you don't have to be.
There's always going to be some guy that's you know, he doesn't have very much overhead and he's just got a webcam on Facebook and you know he's going to charge you whatever he bought the box for just to break it. So
right.
I think our niche nowadays is kind of. You know, we're like a jack of all trades. We've always tried to be. We try and accommodate every price point. That's one thing I've always wanted to stick to is making it so that anybody can join a break on our website, whether you've got a lot of money or you don't have a lot of money. And I want you to be able to get a card from any product they release. So I'm going to make the most expensive product out there available to the guy that really doesn't have a lot of money. He's still going to have a chance to join that break. We don't break everything under the sun anymore. There was a time where anything that the distributor called me with on a pre-order, I bought it. I was like, yeah, I'll take that. We can break it, you know, and all of a sudden 2 years later, I still got a couple of cases sitting on the shelf that never took off, you know? We try and have a nice, we do baseball, basketball, and football. And a couple multi-sport things, but we try and go the full spectrum. So a lot of variety, different price points. We try and do every kind of style break you can think of, from random teams to pick your teams to random players to draft your hits. You know, anything that you can think of, I want you to be able to find it on Firehand. You know, if somebody else is breaking a certain style, there's no reason that we shouldn't be breaking it that style as well. And I think we just bring a different, I'm a much more professional approach nowadays than I used to be. Like I said, we used to just kind of, there's some videos out there of me that are very popular where, you know, I don't know, at the night because we used to get a little too tipsy. I can't afford to do that nowadays. But We have a very professional approach. We pride ourselves on quick turnaround. So we ship out twice a week, Wednesday and Saturday. But if you join a break at 2 a.m. on, you know, Tuesday night, your cards are still going to make it out on that Wednesday. Or if you're joining a break at midnight on Friday, it's still making it out on Saturday.
Nice.
So I think our customers really enjoy that. It's almost – it's funny because, man, if we should happen to if for some reason they don't get their shipment notification like they normally do on a Wednesday, we're getting an email the next day like, hey, man, did you guys ship yesterday? Because I didn't get my email that my cards were coming. You know, so they're on top of it. They've got like a
– You spoiled them, man. You set the standard too high.
They feel like if I break on Tuesday, I'm going to have my cards on Friday. You know,
wow.
It's like they're counting on it. And, you know, you talk about eBay. So it's funny how many guys – it's almost a standard practice nowadays. I know it happens to every breaker. You pull a guy a card – sometimes before the night is over, the card's already on eBay. The guy's already got a screenshot of your hands holding the card. It's on eBay and he's selling it. You know, I'm like, man, what happens if that card gets stuck in the mail, you know?
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's awesome. So how would you describe your style of breaking? I know how I would describe your style, but I won't tip my hand. What would you say in a couple words or less?
My style of breaking... I have to say it's pretty old school, man. there's nothing like off the hinges going crazy. We're not, you know, we don't, there's a lot of, we don't got music blasting in the background and, we're kind of just, I'm just sitting here, me and the cards. I get it. I'm genuine. I'll tell you this, what I am 100% genuine. And that is what I think, maybe this is something you could put in what sets us apart as unique. I am genuinely excited when you see my enthusiasm on camera. It's not a show. I'm not pretending that your card is awesome. If it's awesome, it's awesome, and I'm going to show you that's awesome. If your card's not good, I'm not going to pump it up and pretend that it's the greatest thing under the sun when it's a $2 card.
Right.
You know it's not, and I know it's not. And, you know, I think that's something that our customers appreciate too, you know, like, I mean, some people might feel good about spending their money. Obviously, you spend money, you want to have a good feeling about the break. But I think that we can deliver that that good feeling without having to pat you on the back the whole time that we're opening your cards. I think I'd have to say it's almost like a laid back hanging out with your buddy or hanging out with the family when you're breaking. That's what I think. Maybe having the kids running around in the background with the dog barking out of nowhere and hurting everybody's eardrums kind of makes you feel like you're sitting around, you know, sitting in my house with me every once in a while, I guess. I mean, if I was going to try and describe it.
I like it. I like it. If I was to come up with a word to describe your style, it would be chill. It's one of the more chill break rooms, chill breakers in the industry. I love it. It's my style.
I'll take that.
That's right. So how do you stay motivated then? I mean, going forward, 2019-20, what kind of keeps you motivated to keep doing this?
Be honest, I still love cards. I love the hobby. I love the industry of it. I have loved cards since I was 10 years old. It's the first time my dad took me to a card shop, and I'm a competitor, man. I play baseball my whole life. I see sometimes it's friendly competition, sometimes it's really go get them. But man, I see all these other breakers and all these guys that I've known a long time that, you know, they're my competition, and we're constantly competing every day with them. So not to put that in a negative light, it's not a negative thing, you know, but it's what kind of drives us and keeps us going. We want to be the best at what we do all the time. So you know, we're checking around, we're hearing stories about what's happening here, what's happening there, what do we bring to the table compared to these other guys. I always am excited to continue to try and innovate. You know, that's something that keeps driving. I'm always still constantly thinking of what can I do differently. We have a website that's not like anybody else's card website. It's not crazy off the hinge, it's different, but it's not, you're not, you know, we have a lot of features on our website that you just won't find anywhere else. We want to try and separate ourselves in little ways that you might not even notice that without kind of having them pointed out to you. I think, you know, and the fact that, you know, I got I got a family to support, so that's a big driving factor, you know, is just paying the bills and
Oh yeah.
roof over the head of the kids and the wife, and keeping it going that way. And you know, just want to continue to grow the brand and grow the business. And it's always fun, like you're telling me, with just talking these stories with you today, to think back to that, you know, the infant stages of it, breaking on a YouTube channel in my room at my dad's house with my futon in the background, and you know, and over the course of the last 11 years, what we've turned that into. Just want to keep it going, you know. Don't want to let it die. So
Yeah. No, that's good stuff. That's great stuff. So let's shift a little bit to products for a sec.
okay.
What's your favorite product to break every year?
Cool. Every year, favorite product, I'd have to say it's a tie. And the
Oh,
funny
okay.
part is people will, I like anything Bowman. I love Bowman. And that's, some people hate Bowman because they hate to rip it, they hate all the packs that you have to open and all that stuff. But man, Bowman's always been a product that I love to rip for whatever. The chase and the idea of, you know, I'm always looking for that next gold refractor, all these different color refractors to pop out. Just something about Bowman, just, you know, and the
Yep.
fact that you can pull a kid that's never even sniffed the major leagues and his card's gonna be, you know,
Right.
$1,000 cards of these guys. It's just really intriguing to me. And so anything Bowman Chrome, Bowman Draft. I really like Bowman HTA Choice now because there aren't all those packs to rip. You know, you just got one pack with only the autographs. That's a breakers friendly
No
sport,
kidding.
I call it. And I also like anything National Treasures football, basketball, baseball. I'd have to say those are the two front runners. But I love, if I had to nail down two specific brands, but I like anything high end too. You know, I love raping, you know, for baseball, Definitive, Diamond Icons, Dynasty, just stuff that you can, you know, that you can hit absolute monster cards out of, you know, that where it's just, you pull a card and it's just a super wow factor. Everybody in your chat just goes, oh my, you know, wow, that's amazing. And
Yeah.
the guy who did it's probably doing backflips and, you know, counting his money already. You know, just you get that email the next day, and the guy is so excited about his car and he wants to know, what can I do to insure it to make sure it gets to me safe? And so anything that kind of delivers that real big home run hit punch, I'm all about it.
That's awesome.
So
Yeah. No, it's funny. I was watching one of your breaks the other day, and I hadn't really watched a lot of HTA Choice breaks. I didn't even realize they were coming with foam packed in them, which is awesome.
right.
Sick and sweet. Do you collect yourself?
Yes, I've had to slow down over the once the family started to grow, and you know, we had to take him money kind of takes a cards take a back seat to other expenses.
Sure.
But I'm a big collector. Yeah, I've been collecting my whole life, and everybody knows I'm an avid Frank Thomas collector. He's my number one guy, has been since I was 10 years old. So I still will find myself picking up. You know, if I hit a nice Frank Thomas card in a break, I will not hesitate to email the guy who I pulled it for, see if I can work out a deal.
Nice.
I love the real. I still open my personal boxes every once in a while. I don't record. I never record my own breaks of product. It's like a superstition of mine. So I like to do it private. You know, you rip cards on camera all day, every day. So I do it myself. I like to relax. Don't want need anybody else watching. Just kind of enjoy it myself.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was talking to Chris from Top Shelf months ago, and he brought that up. He said the one time that he opened himself on camera, just his own box, he pulls like the greatest card ever, and he
Oh.
felt guilty for weeks because, you know, it's the one time.
Right. That's hilarious. The one of the biggest cards I've ever pulled, there's a video of it on YouTube, and I wasn't recording it. But one of my customers was recording my feed as I opened it. And it's kind of like, you know, it's a very well-known video. We're pulling the Derrick Rose, one of one exquisite auto rookie,
Wow. Holy
09
moly.
exquisite. And let's just say I had a few drinks that night. I was, you know, rolling around on the floor, screaming and cussing, and you know, it's quite a sight to behold. But yeah, it's pretty
So
funny.
good.
But I did not feel bad. Trust me, I did not feel bad about pulling that car. You see on the video, I tried to fill that exquisite brake for weeks and nobody wanted to buy it. Nobody would join it. And it's so funny to think back nowadays. I think it was like $60 a spot to join that exquisite brake.
Oh, my gosh.
We could not fill it. And you just look at the brakes that fill on a daily basis nowadays. That exquisite would have been gone in 30 seconds.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, I could not fill it. And
what was that car worth at the time? Do you remember? Well, I mean, that Rose had to be $5,000.
We sold it for $10,000 cash.
Oh, my goodness.
Collector back then. Yeah.
Wow.
10 or 12. I think it might have been 12, actually. Yeah, 12.
Yeah, and back then, I mean, yeah, that car now, modern day, like the Zion Williamson version of that's $50,000.
Oh, yeah, for sure. In a heartbeat. Hey. It would be like pulling the Luka Doncic, you know, 101 right now. You know, he was the guy. Derrick Rose was the guy. Back then, before all the injuries, everybody thought he was going to be the best basketball player of this generation, you know. Unguardable, you used to say. So, yeah.
No kidding. No, you know, any publicity is good publicity. Is that what they say? Do you believe that?
Most of the time. I do believe it most of the time. You know, if people are watching your videos, they see your name, whether or not they're here, you know, they think you're doing something silly on your video or not, your name's getting out there.
Yeah.
And, there's stuff that's happened over the course of the years, of course, that you're maybe a little embarrassed about, but whatever.
Exactly.
You know,
it works itself out.
Where we are now. So,
Yeah. So are you, with the baseball background you have, are you pretty hardcore into prospecting? Do you pay attention to prospects and kind of the wave?
When I can. I used to do it a lot more. Okay. Like I said, nowadays, it's very minimal. Most of my sports interaction is done while I'm actually live breaking and interacting with the customers. And I get a lot of my sports knowledge from them or from the stuff they're talking about. Most of my I seldom get to watch ESPN or anything like that. You know, most of the stuff on TV around here is stuff the kids watch. So I don't keep up with that much. But prospects, I go on the forums on Blowout. I like to follow.
Yep.
I'll join my own break. I'll still join breaks. I join Houdini's breaks on there. I'll buy some players and like the big, massive 50 case breaks of Bowman. So I follow some of the guys. You know, I try and, you know, I follow the draft initially to see who the top, you know, 10, 15 picks are and trying to keep a tab on it that way. But I'm not as in depth as I used to be. Yeah, I used to really follow that a lot and prospect and buy up a bunch of prospects and try and hold them and flip them and sell them. And so I do follow, but not as much as I used to.
Yeah, makes sense. It's fair. That is fair.
You got to know the guy. Sometimes you have to know, this is one of my own personal gripes about breaking, is if you're opening the stuff, you should have an idea about what it is you're opening, you know? Like, if you're going to be opening all these baseball prospects and you're going to pull a guy that's good, you better know that the guy's good. You don't want everybody in your chat room to be going, oh, that's amazing play. You're like, oh, what, who, this guy? Oh, this guy's good? Oh, that was me opening hockey cards. I have zero idea about hockey. So I'd be like, Chad, you know that's like a $500 card right there. What? Really? This guy, McDavid? Who, McDavid? But... you know, I was always like a thing. I'm watching the guy do a break and a pull a card. He has no clue about it. I'm like, wow, these guys are joining this guy's break. He doesn't even know he's opening. So, I try and stay versed, at least current with who the rookies are. I try and follow a little bit, and every once in a while, check on the online to see who's leading the league in what as far as stats and so.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question. It's funny you bring it up. Was that one of your bigger pet peeves with other breakers? It's just
that one, you know, not one of my bigger ones. I really don't have much pet peeve. I really, honestly, in the same line of thought, I don't have much time to watch another breaker nowadays. Watch a live stream or see what guys are doing.
Yeah,
I did. You know, that was something that would catch my attention. Or you know, like I said. The stuff that I don't do, it's kind of funny. Stuff I don't do is the kind of stuff, you know, maybe because it bothers me to watch other guys do. I don't like when a guy tries to pump up every card he pulls out of the pack like it's a big hit, you know?
Right.
You know?
Well, I can appreciate that you at least pronounce names right. And if I was to pronounce hockey names, I would screw it up too. So we both get a pass for that, but
right.
I cringe when I hear someone say Luka Doncic, or yeah. It's like, come on, man, just watch one NBA game and figure out how to pronounce his name.
Oh yeah, I just found out because I was watching the finals that I've been pronouncing Pascal Siakam's name wrong for the last 3 years. You know, Pascal Siakam. I'm like, oh, I got a Pascal Siakam, and I watched one game of the finals, and it's like Pascal Siakam's really having a great game. I'm like, oh, jeez. How many other? Oh, there's a lot more guys.
He's here. He's finally here. That's probably our sign. Well, statistics show me that people stop listening about 58 minutes, so we're at an hour.
Right on.
I got a couple questions for you, rapid fire. So just kind of shoot from the hip if you can.
Okay.
You got to pick a player to break with you for a day. Which player do you pick?
Frank Thomas.
Okay. All right.
I mean, well, he's retired. Do I have to pick somebody current?
Let's pick a current player for us, too. Let's get
into it. Current player, I'd like to break with Kawhi Leonard.
Nice. Oh, that'd be boring. Oh, my gosh.
San Diego State. He's the most notable basketball player to come out of my alma mater besides Tony Gwynn. So,
nice. You're an Aztec, right? Are you Aztecs?
Yeah, I'm an Aztec. So I got to break last year at the rookie photo shoot, the NFL rookie photo shoot. I did that event, and I got to break with Rashad Penny, who was the best running back to ever come out of San Diego State since Marshall Faulk. So
nice.
That was my one thing when I went to the event. I was like, look, I need to break with Penny. I don't care anybody else that I sit down with, but you have to give me Rashad Penny. So if I had to pick somebody else right now, I pick an Aztec. Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. That's awesome. Okay, you open up your cupboard right now. What cereal do you see first?
Chocolate Cheerios, but they're not the real Cheerios. They're some knockoff Whole Foods brand of Cheerios.
They're three times the cost, but they don't have gluten.
Right. Gluten-free, all-organic Cheerios.
So good. So good. What's your favorite go-to adult beverage?
I like, man, it's been so long since I had one because, let's see, it was called, it's beer, but, Lagunitas, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, like Lagunitas IPAs are my favorite beer currently. Light beers, Miller Lite, always been Miller Lite. Of all the light beers, that's my favorite, but.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, my favorite brewery in America is Stone out of San Diego.
So Stone's good, yeah. Good IPAs. I like Stone too.
Yeah.
There's Gargoyle on it. They got like gargoyles on some of their stuff.
Right? Yeah, they do. Yep. Yeah. Yep. All right, last question. Which actor and actress plays you and your wife in the documentary about Firehand?
Oh man. Jeez. So me is Brad Pitt, of course.
Oh my gosh. It Mizzou guy. He's a Mizzou guy. Yeah.
No, and let's see, my wife would have to be jeez.
Be careful on this one.
I know. This is a tough one. I would have to say, who's the most beautiful actress out there right now?
It's a great question.
Maybe I'll just go Brad and Angelina.
We'll there you go.
Leave them together. They reunite
for a movie reunite. About you.
Play the team Firehand. Yeah, absolutely.
So good. So good. Awesome. All right. So where can folks find you? And then discount codes, man. You got anything you want to throw out there?
Oh, yeah. That's right. So, yeah, we're at firehandcards.com. If it's lost in the shovel, it's like your hand is on fire. Firehandcards.com. Very simple. All the links to all our live streams are on there. We're predominantly on YouTube, and we still have our Breakers channel open for anybody that wanders in over there.
Is that still alive? I didn't realize they're still
going. It is. It's still alive. I mean, you know, unfortunately, it was a great platform for a time. I remember when we first moved over there. Breakers was only born. This is my last little story. Breakers was born because Blog TV died. TV sold off to a bigger company, and they closed it. And we all looked for somewhere else to go. So we went to what was called Vaughn TV, and then we kind of overtook Vaughn, so he had to make a channel all for ourselves. So we made Breaker TV. But yeah, I think with the emergence of YouTube doing the live streaming, it's so much easier for people to get there from anywhere on their phone, on their tablets, whatever. It's just a better, you know, tough to say, sad to say, but a better platform. So I think everybody kind of gravitated to YouTube away from Breakers. Breakers is a great spot if you're just like looking for, seriously looking for somewhere to walk in and jump in a break like in 10 seconds or something, going to like instant gratification, go find a spot in a break. You know, I think there's a lot of guys that still break on there where they're constantly like running these fillers like every minute of the day. So, but yeah, we're on both platforms. If you do come to Firehand Cards for your first time, or if you've been there before and you've never used the code, you just use this promo call, just new guy. N-E-W-Y, new guy. It'll give you save you like 7% on your purchase. It's a one-time deal. So if you've never used it, you don't have to use it the first time, but you can, you know, everybody gets to use it once. And that's about it. We got big national, like I said, we'll have big national breaks coming up, even though we're not attending. We'll have all kinds of goodies from the national available to everybody still.
Awesome. New guy. Brilliant. Good stuff, man. Well, Chad, thank you so much. Seriously.
Thank you so much. Yep. Pleasure, man. It's a pleasure.
All right, man. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.